So you were born in Walters. Is that where you stayed and lived forever?
Yeah, I grew up there. I went to school first in a little rural school in Lincoln Valley, which was in Cotton County near Walters, first grade. And then my dad moved into town. It was really tough trying to farm and make a living. And he opened a grocery store in Walters. I think it's because he knew how to buy and butcher meat, but the grocery store handled everything. We lived in the back of that store. Mama hung quilts on a wire line in the back of that store, made us a kind of a living quarters in the back. That was when I was in the second grade. From the second grade on, I lived in Walters until I graduated in 1948 from high school there, and during that period lived in 12 different houses in Walters. All of them until that last one rented.
Why?
Well, that was the funniest thing. All my life I had hated to move. I didn't know why I hated it so much, but one time I was taking my wife, Marg Elliston, around Walters because I was thinking about writing a nonfiction book called Before the World Changed, about life there in Walters pre-World War II. As we were driving around, I said, we used to live in that place. Then a little while, I said, we lived over there. And then drive down another street, and I said, we lived there. And she finally counted up, there 12 of them. She said, why'd you live so many places? I had no idea. I asked my sister Sue about it. She didn't know, but there was a woman still alive but living in a nursery home that had been my mother's close friend, Lil Williams. Sue went and asked her, and Lil Williams said that you all would move into a rented house, and your mother would fix it up. My mother could do anything, too, paint, wallpaper, carpenter, whatever. And the landlord would raise the rent, so then you'd move to another place and they'd fix it up and so forth, over and over. I wrote in a book once, but this is the truth. I was telling some people back in New Mexico about me living in so many houses. One guy said, Fred, look like you would have finally got the message. You keep coming home from school and finding your folks had moved, leaving no forwarding address. And the other one said, it's a damn good thing, Fred, you didn't get elected president. Because the government would have gone broke putting plaques on all your places. Fred Harris lived here, Fred Harris lived there.
Right.
My dad's only house, first house he ever owned, he bought my senior year in Walters. As I later thought, I didn't think about it at the time. I think he did it for me so I'd have a nice place for my senior year in high school.
And these houses you lived in, indoor plumbing, electricity, and all that?
Well, we didn't have indoor plumbing until I think I was 12. We lived twice in a house on the edge of Walters that we called the Bayless Place. It did not have indoor water. We had a hydrant out in the yard. It was city water, and to carry water into the house. And it did not have a toilet in the house. The first time we lived there, there was no electricity. And, of course, there was no telephone. Then we moved into a house on Virginia Street, more in the center of Walters. There was the first time we had a phone. First time we had electricity and running water and so forth, indoor toilets.
You talk about the work your mother and dad did, but didn't you do some other things to make some extra money? And they did too?
Yes. My folks always worked hard, but when I was very little, and I'm talking about grade school, say when I was 4, 5, 6, along in there, every late fall and winter, we'd go out, as we said, out on the plains, out in West Texas, when the cotton was ripe. In those days, you know, we didn't have mechanical cotton pickers. We had to have humans do it. And with my mother's sister and her husband and all of us kids, there were three of us then and two cousins. We all went out there and we really camped out during the cotton picking season. We didn't pick cotton, actually pulled bolls, but we called it picking cotton. You picked the whole cotton boll. My folks would, mostly on their knees, pulling a cotton sack, taking two rows each. My sister would be ahead of one parent and I ahead of the other. We would pick cotton ahead of them and fill up our slop jars or buckets and dump the cotton in the row so that when my folks came along, they could pick it up. My folks together by themselves, just two of them, they could pick a bale of cotton a day. That's about 2,000 pounds of cotton between them, including, you know, the seeds and the burrs and everything. Ginned, that would make a bale of cotton, which weighs about 500 pounds. I started work also in the summer primarily when I was 5. My grandfather, my dad's father, had sort of a custom hay baling operation. And all the uncles at one time or another, who were like brothers to me, were the crew. And in those days, when I was five, and for several years after that, the way the baler worked, it was powered by a horse or a mule going around and around. That's what caused the squeeze for the bale to be tied with baling wire. Somebody had to be on the horse, because every now and then maybe you'd get behind the people that were monkeying wires and tying the baling wires, and they'd holler, "Stop it on the squeeze," while the squeeze was on tight, and they could rapidly tie it then. So some human had to be on the horse or mule, and they didn't want to pay a grown-up to do that. So I started out working daylight to dark, riding that horse or mule all day long. I made a dime a day. I graduated then to monkeying wires. On one side, somebody has to push the wire through, then it's pushed back. And on the other side, somebody that's really good and fast ties the baling wire, two strands of it around the bale. Then I graduated from that to running a buck rake, which is a two-horse or two-mule outfit with teeth in front of it, like two before teeth. You go out and pick up the hay, which has been put in shocks, and bring it back to the baler. The baler's stationary. I was too small, light, to ride on that machine. I couldn't get enough leverage on the horse or mule, and so I walked all day, most of the time, barebacked and no hat on or whatever. I did that until I was 12. The year I was 12, my dad bought a used Gleaner Baldwin combine, and together with a neighbor friend of ours, Jack Copeland, and his boys, we started going to the wheat harvest to start in late May in Oklahoma, and then either go to West Texas or to Kansas, depending on how the wheat was, and then from there on up to Nebraska, and then finally to North Dakota. We'd wind up in North Dakota in late August. I did that for 9 summers in a row. During the school year, when I was really little, I helped a guy who had made his own power mower, used a wash machine motor, but it was a heavy iron platform and so forth, so he couldn't push it. He worked up a harness, so I pulled this mower. I graduated from that eventually. I was, of course, a paper boy, like so many people were in those days, both for the Blood Morning Press and for the Wichita Falls Record. Then I worked in Merritt's Dry Goods Store for a long time, sweeping out and cleaning up, and finally did a little bit of clerking there. By the time I was a senior in high school, I decided I needed to learn a trade if I was going to go to law school, which I had decided I wanted to do. So I got a job working for the local newspaper, Walter's Herald. We printed one weekly on Wednesday night, and the Temple Tribune another weekly on Thursday night. I worked after school in evenings, particularly on those nights. And then also I learned to be a job printer, printing church bulletins and invitations and all sorts of things on Saturday. So I always worked, and I just assumed, I mean, it never occurred to me that you couldn't, and it was a wonderful thing. Surely from the eighth grade on, I had my own bank account and, you know, bought my own clothes and school supplies and that sort of thing. So did a lot of my friends that are the same way.